today, markets gyrate into Christmas after a two-year round trip. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Well, in the last trading day before the Christmas break, US stocks gyrated to a mixed close on Friday, having digested cooler than expected US inflation data that firmed bets for Federal Reserve interest rate cuts in the new year. That said, all three indices turned less decisive in light trading as the afternoon progressed after an initial rally on data showing inflation is easing closer to the US central bank's target. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 0.05% to 37,385. The S&P 500 gained 0.17% to 4,754. And the NASDAQ Composite added 0.19% to 14,992. Small caps outperformed the broader market, actually, with the Russell 2000 ending up 0.8%. Of the 11 major sectors in the S&P 500, consumer discretionary was the sole loser, while consumer staples enjoyed the largest percentage gains. Nike tumbled 11.8% after the sportswear maker trimmed its annual forecast figures due to cautious consumer spending. Its peers, Foot Locker and Dick's Sporting Goods, shed 2.7% and 3.9% respectively. Karuma Therapeutics soared 47.7% though in the wake of Bristol-Myers Squibb's agreement to acquire the drug maker for $14 billion worth in cash. All three indices notched their eighth consecutive weekly gains, the longest winning streak for the S&P 500 since late 2017. For the NASDAQ and the Dow, it marks the longest streak of consecutive weekly gains since the beginning of 2019. The S&P 500 is now within 1% of its record close, reached in January 2022. Should it close above that level, it would confirm the benchmark index has been in a bull market since bottoming in October 2022. But put another way, it's gone nowhere in 2 years. In fact, valuations are extended, and some are now saying the bubble has become even more manic and all-encompassing than the late 1990s dot-com tech bubble, which was led by the NASDAQ, of course. This time around, the Dow is leading the pack and has become possibly irrationally ebullient. While this could become even more insane to the upside, the sentiment and level of spec activity are suddenly back to levels historically indicative of a top. December the 20th sudden sharp reversal in the stock market actually is a warning shot. It was down 1.5% on the day. Tremors possibly before a bigger earthquake, potentially. Though some market participants attribute the move just to a combination of low volumes, activity in zero-day options, and trades by institutional investors after an extended period of gains for stocks. Investors have largely demonstrated a hearty appetite for stocks. Bank of America clients bought $6.7 billion worth of US equities on a net basis in the latest week, the largest weekly net inflows since October 2022. Bank of America Global Research said in a December 19th report. Retail trading accounted for 30% of total trading volume on Friday, compared to the 30 average of 10%, and volumes in the under $1 stocks are surging as well, reflecting an extreme degree of risk-taking. After having chased higher yields aggressively in the past months, the FOMC pivot and the strengthening soft landing narrative have had individuals redirecting their purchases towards riskier securities, research firm Vanda said in the note. We expect this trend to continue into the new year as yields remain under pressure. In the context of what we've seen on a year-to-date basis, it's actually pretty extraordinary what we've seen in the fourth quarter, said Michael Green, chief strategist at Simplify Asset Management. Small caps continue their absolute tear. The Russell 2000 has gone from being down on the year as of August to now being up 15.6% for the year, Green said. This is truly becoming an everything rally. A swathe of data was released on the last trading day before the long weekend, notably the Commerce Department's Personal Consumption Expenditures Report, the PCE report, which showed inflation continues to meander down towards the Fed's average annual 2% target. The so-called Core Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index, which strips out the volatile food and energy components, increased 0.1% from a month earlier, after a downwardly revised 0.1% gain in October, according to the Bureau of Economic Analysis. From a year ago, the Fed's preferred gauge of underlying inflation advanced 3.2%. Policymakers pay close attention to services inflation, excluding housing and energy, which tends to be more sticky. That metric advanced 0.1% too for a second month and rose 2.7% from a year earlier. Of course, on a six-month annualized basis, the core metric rose 1.9%, just below the Fed's target. But whether that makes much sense as a measure, I'll let you decide. Separately, Americans expect prices to climb at around 3.1% over the next year, according to the final December reading from the University of Michigan, matching the preliminary figure, and that's the lowest since March 2021. They see costs rising 2.9% over the next 5 to 10 years, according to data released on Friday. The initial reading was 2.8%. The index of consumer sentiment increased to a five-month high of 69.7 from 61.3 in November. That's an 8.4% gain and was the largest since 2005. A separate report also showed new orders for core capital goods landed well above analysts' expectations, an upside surprise that bodes well for US corporate spending plans. Together, they reinforce the conviction that not only will the central bank begin cutting interest rates as early as March 2024, but it might also pull off that trick of reining in inflation without tipping the economy into recession, i.e. a soft landing. The PCE report was very dovish. The top line number showed deflation for the month. It was very positive and perhaps a step towards lowering rates, one analyst said. Some call for that to happen in March. We think it's overly optimistic. The economy is strong. It doesn't need lower rates at the moment. Financial markets are still pricing in a 74.1% likelihood that the Fed will actually implement a 25 basis point cut in March. The narrative will continue to be about the Fed making a dovish pivot, said Angelo Corfes, senior investment strategist at Edward Jones. That provides support on markets and sentiment, and it is unlikely to change next week. To be sure, trading volumes are expected to be thin for the remainder of the year as investors take holiday breaks, leaving stocks particularly sensitive to unexpected news or large trades. At the same time, investors heavy in cash could seek to buy into the market next week because of the fear of missing out on the equity rally, often referred to as FOMO, said Kevin Marr, President and Chief Investment Officer at Hennion & Walsh Asset Management. I think the markets have gotten a little ahead of themselves based on the extent of the rally so far, he said. But I could see the market moving up slightly higher from here just because of that FOMO trade. Now, a year-end rally in government bonds has potentially limited further gains in some treasury maturities, said Rick Reeder, Chief Investment Officer for Global Fixed Income at BlackRock. US Treasuries have bounced back from a severe sell-off over the past 2 months on expectations that the Federal Reserve will start cutting interest rates next year as inflation cools and the economy slows. But market bets that the Fed will trim rates by 150 basis points starting as soon as March are overdone, Ryder said in an interview. The Fed's economic projections published earlier this month projected 75 basis points of interest rate cuts next year. To achieve what the market is pricing in, you'd have to have a pretty significant deterioration in some of the indicators, like labour, and we don't anticipate that, he said. I think there's been this persistent scepticism around the US economy, which I think is overdone. He believes that Treasury, the extreme short and long end of the yield curve, are unlikely to see more meaningful gains after their rapid appreciation in the last several months. Much of the 2024 return for the very front end and for the very back end, I think, has already been achieved, he said. Benchmark 10-year Treasury yields, which of course move inversely to prices, have declined from over 5% in October to less than 3.9% this week, and the 30-year bond yield has fallen by around 100 basis points from their October highs. So it expects that rate cuts of 75 to 100 basis points next year, starting in May. Certain parts of the Treasury curve, such as bonds with 5 to 7 year maturities, are said to benefit the most from those cuts, with 5 year yields possibly declining by 50 basis points or more, he added. Oil slipped in New York trading on Friday, but it's still headed for its biggest weekly advance in 2 months. Attacks in the Red Sea have forced hundreds of ships to take safer but longer routes, delaying the delivery of oil cargoes. WTI was last at $73.45, while Brent was at $79.23, and gold futures was last at $2,064, still holding above the 2,000 level, at least for now, although exhibiting a couple of bearish reversals, suggesting higher might be hard from this point. Over in Europe, trade was light and foreshortened as things closed for Christmas. The FTSE was at 7,697, the DAX was at 16,706, and the CAC 40 in France closed at 7,568. The news from the UK was that it was possibly in a mild recession as GDP was moved just below zero in the earlier quarter. And with the possibility of a technical recession on the horizon, frankly, it doesn't make much difference as most households are hunkering down, though the Prime Minister's promise of growth could take a hit. The implied GDP deflator, which reflects the broadest measure of inflation in the UK economy, actually shows the price of all goods and services that comprise GDP. And it's an important to note that GDP inflator covers the whole of the domestic economy, not just consumer spending, and also reflects the change in the relative price of exports to imports. But compared to the same quarter a year ago, it was 8.4% up, revised from a first estimate of 7.9%. Now, most Asian stocks moved in a tight range on Friday as a stellar rally on the back of a dovish Federal Reserve now appears to be cooling. Asian stocks also saw a heavy degree of profit taking in recent sessions, although most regional exchanges were still headed for small weekly gains. Japan's Nikkei 225 index rose slightly on Friday as it steadied after a 1.6% slide in the prior session. Losses in automobile stocks battered the Nikkei after the country's biggest car maker suspended production in a major unit after revelations of widespread misconduct. And data earlier in the week showed Japan's exports contracted for the first time in 3 months, hit chiefly by a slowdown in China, where manufacturing activity in the country also remained in contraction. And data on Friday showed that Japanese inflation eased as expected in November, but still remains above the Bank of Japan's 2% annual target. Headline CPI inflation grew 2.8% year-on-year in November, slowing from the 3.3% seen in the prior month. A month-on-month drop in food and energy prices was the key driver of the softer inflation reading. Core CPI inflation, which excludes volatile fresh food prices, rose 2.5% year-on-year, according to data from the Statistics Bureau. The reading was in line with analyst expectations and slowed from the prior month's print of 2.9%. The year-on-year reading was also at its slowest pace since August 2022, while month-on-month growth in core inflation turned static. A core reading that excludes both fresh food and fuel prices, and also closely considered by the Bank of Japan, slowed to 3.8% year-on-year from 4% in the prior month, indicating underlying inflation is also easing but still above target. And frankly, the reading gives little clarity on when and if the Bank of Japan plans to pivot away from its ultra-dovish policy. The Nikkei was up 0.7% over the week and remains within sight of a 33-year high. The Japanese yen showed little reaction on Friday's reading, as did 10-year Japanese bond yields. South Korea's KOSPI was flat, but still traded close to a four-month high. The index heavy exposure to technology has put it on course for a 1.7% gain over the week. The KOSPI was also set for an eighth straight week of gains, having marked a strong run of gains after the government banned short selling in October. India's Nifty 50 index remains within sight of record highs hit early in December, but a heavy dose of profit-taking put the Nifty on course for a 0.9% loss over the week. Chinese stocks largely lagged their Asian peers this week and traded close to annual lows amid persistent concerns over an economic recovery in China. The Shanghai Composite fell 0.1% and traded to a 40-month low, while Hong Kong's Hang Seng fell 1.77%. Australian shares ended flat despite a flurry of takeover bids ahead of the four-day Christmas break and as mining giants traded towards record highs. The ASX 200 closed lower at 7,501 at the closing bell, with gain in energy and real estate offsetting a drag in consumer staples. The benchmark entered the week up 0.8% in the fourth consecutive period of gains and closed just 1.6% off its record top of 7,632 in 2021. As I said, a two-year round trip to nowhere. The All Ordinaries also ended unchanged. The ASX will be closed on Monday and Tuesday for Christmas Day and Boxing Day trading, but will resume on Wednesday. Mining giants came to the spotlight on expectations of healthy iron ore demand for winter restocking. Fortescue broke a historical top of $28.40 intraday and closed at 1.1% at $28.35. Rio Tinto tested Thursday's record peak of $135.40 but settled where it started the day at $134.40. BHP Group was also unchanged at $49.73, within a whisker of a 2023 peak of $50.21. Iron ore prices leapt 25% so far this year on hard demand from China after Beijing reopened plants following the harsh COVID lockdown. The benchmark January iron ore on the Singapore Exchange was up 1.4% to $137.55 a tonne, with weekly gains of 2.7%. But it was actually corporate news that sparked the biggest moves on the ASX. Taxi company A2B Australia surged 17.3% to $2.14 after receiving a $182 million buyout offer from Singapore-listed transport giant ComfortDelGro. Contract manufacturing services Probiotic vaulted 15.5% to $2.91 following Indonesia's pharmaceutical manufacturer PT Predom Pharma buyout offer. And cleaning and security contract Millennium soared almost 74% to 1.075 after receiving a bid from tech company SoftBank Robotics Singapore at $1.15 per share. With the large underperformance of small cap industrial companies versus the broader ASX over the past 2 years, this has created opportunities, said Brian Johnson, head of equity sales at MA Moelis Australia. As the chances of a soft economic landing improve, we expect would-be acquirers to get more confident, thereby stimulating more M&A activity. And meanwhile, shipbuilder Austal jumped 7.2% to $1.86 after winning a US Navy contract worth $1.3 billion and orders from the Australian government, including two patrol boats, for $157 million. Among the biggest losers on the ASX was Core Lithium, which plunged over 21% to 26 cents after suspending work on its B33 project in the Northern Territory to preserve cash amid a slump in lithium prices. And dairy producer Sunland Milk sank 6.5% to 87 cents after issuing a profit downgrade due to an increased borrowing cost amid an ongoing dispute with A2 Milk. Azure Minerals rose 1.4% after flagging the potential global significance of its WA Andover lithium mine following promising drilling results. And lastly, the Australian dollar climbed to a five-month high and topped 68 cents as rate cut hopes weighed on the greenback ahead of the US inflation data. It was at 53.55 against the UK pound. And finally, in crypto, in a surprising turn of events, Bitcoin whales have a staggering $2.2 billion worth of Bitcoin in a span of just a week, according to crypto analyst Ali. Approximately 50,000 Bitcoins were sold during this period, raising questions about the motives behind such significant movements on the market. As at the latest, the current price of Bitcoin stands at $43,662, reflecting a marginal decrease in the last 24 hours. However, zooming out over the 30-day perspective, the leading cryptocurrency exhibited a commendable 19% increase in value. So investors and traders are now eagerly seeking insights into the reasons behind the recent massive sell-off by the Bitcoin whales. One possible explanation of this sudden sellout could be profit-taking, as Bitcoin has experienced such a notable bull run in recent weeks. Cryptocurrency's price surge has attracted institutional and retail investors alike, with some long-term holders perhaps seizing the opportunity to lock in substantial profits. However, the precise motivations of those whales remain speculative at this point. In a related development, the total number of Bitcoin addresses with non-zero balances has a significant milestone, reaching 50 million. This statistic underscores the increasing adoption and distribution of Bitcoin across a growing user base. Notably, the average holding per Bitcoin user now stands at approximately $16,000 US, adding perhaps a layer of complexity to ongoing discussions about market dynamics. And in fact, if you stand back, concern about the complexity of market dynamics is a good way to think about it, because as I said at the start of the show, we've gone nowhere in 2 years. We're now back to close to high levels, particularly in the US and in other markets too. And the question is, will this actually represent fair value or good value? Or are stocks now significantly overpriced? Markets are becoming exuberant, and this is actually the time not to buy in, whereas in fact a lot of retail investors are now, because of fear of missing out, buying in. This could end in tears, I suspect, as we go through the middle of next year. So be cautious, be careful, and perhaps take a break over Christmas, relax and enjoy yourself. The markets will still be there in the new year, and probably will be ebullient for at least the next 2 or 3 months. But it could wear a bit thin, and we could see some corrections later. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.